Hey, you reached the Yahoo Fantasy Football Podcast. It's Liz.
And Matt.
And today, Dak's shoulder is feeling hurty.
Chris Godwin is also feeling hurty. Is Brashad Perryman going to win some fantasy Super Bowls this weekend?
I wonder. Also, a team that's not going to the Super Bowl is the Jacksonville Jaguars. We say, girl, bye to angry boomer Tom Coughlin.
We grant some Christmas wishes to floundering teams.
And give our one thought, or maybe more than one thought, for every game this weekend.
Listen up and good luck.
Bye.
Hi, welcome to the Yahoo Fantasy Football Podcast. I'm Liz, that's Matt. Producer Brett's way over there judging us already. Speaking of judging, if you're listening because you made it to your Super Bowl week, congratulations. And if you didn't, I guess you suck, or maybe our advice does.
Hey, sometimes it's just bad luck. You know, this is, after all, partially, if not more than 50% a game of luck. You know, it's...
Well, Matt, I think you are the only one of the three of us who has at least one team advancing to the Super Bowl. So maybe you should start this whole show.
Well, I don't know about that. Didn't make it in the podcast listener league.
Super exclusive. Yeah,
forget the exact human who bounced me out, but I wouldn't have had Dalvin Cook this week anyways. He was on that team. Chris Godwin was on that team. So really just like it made sense. Like put the damn thing out the pasture, you know?
Yeah, I feel that Kenny Stills on my bench is still a little bit biting for me, which is why, spoiler alert, I'll mention him in fantasy damage during FFL this Sunday. But let's start with some news, and I want to talk about Dak's shoulder, which apparently is a little bit hurty. So let's discuss.
A little bit hurty.
Very, very big postseason implications for the Cowboys and the Eagles in Week 16. And obviously the Cowboys are traveling to Philadelphia for this matchup.
Yeah. Dak says he's going to be good to go. He's going to play. Okay. All right. It's tough. I think right now the Cowboys are sort of reverting back to the put the ball in Zeke's hands 20 times anyways. And like, I'm sure we'll hear some win-loss stats of when when Zeke gets 20 plus touches, the Cowboys have this record or whatever, which is always hyper misleading, but whatever. I mean, it's a shame too, because also I still think Philadelphia's secondary has, even though we have seen some of the players, you know, come back to health, some of their original guys, like Ronald Darby isn't playing well. Dwayne Haskins, Terry McLaurin, Sneaky had a good game against them last week. So it's kind of a shame if you have Amari Cooper, Michael Gallup, Dak Prescott. These guys are coming off pretty poor fantasy games anyways.
Yeah, well, I think there's a couple of things at play here. I know everyone is talking about exactly your point. In fact, where you were saying that I was pulling up notes on Zeke, because that does seem to be the way the Cowboys have won in the past. And he does look better and better. Obviously, the matchup against Philadelphia versus the run is tough because, as you just mentioned, they're much weaker through the air. And even though they're healthier, their DBs is not a squad of elite level top PFF rated players.
No.
So we also have the people who want to ding Amari Cooper on the road. And Michael Gallup was a big old zero, not a zero, but he certainly didn't do, he was a bust last week. If Dak is not entirely healthy, you know, I also want to say, like, forget fantasy for a second. I have been intrigued by this matchup because I talked about this on Cover 3 on Monday. Everybody is sitting around saying, well, this is the Cowboys game, right? Like, the Cowboys should absolutely win this game. They had Sean Lee showing up, looking like a vintage version of himself, healthy last week. Like, this is a moment where they put it all together and get what they should get. I say that is exactly why they will not, in fact, win. And the fascinating thing to me about the Eagles is that, yes, on paper, the Cowboys are a better squad. But because the Eagles have suffered so many injuries throughout the season, they have been forced to get creative, to find, as we talked about weeks ago, alternative ways to win, whether it was Dallas Goedert, whether it was for a minute, Nelson Agholor, Boston Scott, Greg Ward. Like, there are all of these kind of epiphanies, if you will, that the Eagles have had. And because of that, I think that they are just in a better place to ultimately win this contest at home.
I think you're right, especially from the standpoint of like these options that they have come up with, the two tight ends. Like Ertz did not start off as a great fantasy pick, but he's ended very strong.
And why?
Because they don't have anybody else. They don't have any outside threats.
And
like, the volume is...
And when we were all saying at the like in August, like, who's the most overdrafted player? It was Zach Ertz, because we were worried about his volume now that he had everybody healthy, right?
And changes around here.
There you go.
So, like, the two tight ends, Boston Scott, Miles Sanders as receivers, Greg Ward as a possible answer as a slot receiver. I think those all match up very well against Dallas as a defense. Obviously, a lot of it's in garbage time, but we went into last week saying, like, hey, look out for Cooper Kupp. Tyler Higbee's going to have a big game again because Dallas struggles to cover the middle of the field. Mitch Trubisky went up and down the middle of the field on them the week prior. Then they allow 18 catches combined to Kupp and Higbee. So I think, like, stylistically, what the Eagles do well-ish, I'll say, on offense right now, the Cowboys struggle to defend.
And vice versa. What the Cowboys are expected to do, at least on offense, is a strong suit for the Eagles defense.
Yeah, well, I mean, it matches up good for the Eagles on both sides of the ball. Like, that's the thing. So my question to you, though, who do you want to see win this game?
The Eagles.
Yeah? I find the Eagles such a hard watch, though.
They are. But I ask you this. Do you want to have the will Jason Garrett be the head coach of the Dallas Cowboys conversation in 2020?
No, I want it to be over and done with. But I feel like of the two, so it's interesting because there's that part of it. There's the motivation part of it is like, let's get Jason Garrett the hell out of here. Like, let's just get it over and done with. If they don't make the playoffs, we get it over and done with. I find the Cowboys to be a more compelling team to watch, though. And I also think that if one of these teams could win a playoff game, I think the Eagles have no shot to win a playoff game. I think the Cowboys have a pretty good shot to win a playoff game in their own building.
I don't want to have this conversation. I don't want to do this again next year. I would rather forsake 2019 for eternity.
I get it, but I also think I think there's a pretty good chance that even if they make the playoffs, like there's a non-0% chance that super loyal Jerry Jones is like, you know what, let's run it back with Jason one more time. But like, I think in the end, I think that unless they make like a Super Bowl run, I think they've already closed the book on the Garrett era. But I don't know that. So, to your point, why risk it?
Yeah, I'd also just like to see everything. Like, I don't want to risk these receivers getting hurt next year. I'd like them to start 2020 healthy. I do think the squad has also, I'm fascinated to see how they work the money from here on out throughout the offseason. And if there are more questions, like if this team loses now and they don't make the playoffs, then like that conversation becomes much more fascinating because it's full of hypotheticals.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, there's a lot of, like you said, there's a lot of contractual situations to deal with in Dallas. Like obviously Dak Prescott being chief among them.
Yeah.
And then Amari Cooper is not signed for next year.
I have a question for you.
Yep.
If Dak wins this one, banged up, not just with the shoulder, there's also like this like hairline fracture in his finger, supposedly, right? If he does win this one, and let's say he manages out of nowhere to win it in convincing fashion, does that count as a signature moment in your book?
Yeah, for sure.
Right?
No doubt.
He needs one right now.
He needs one. I mean, he's obviously not in the MVP race anymore. The MVP race is over. It's Lamar Jackson's to unless he, like, you know, I don't know, dies. Like, then I think that's the only shot. He's not winning the MVP this year. And even then, I think they might give it to him. But in the long run, I think Dak has already cemented his worth to this franchise. Like, they have, in a world where, damn, Jared Goff is counting $36 million against the cap next year, I think that Dak Prescott is worth more than Jared Goff right now. Convincingly worth more than Jared Goff.
It'll be interesting to watch. For now, though, let's focus back on the fantasy Super Bowl. And we're going to talk about another injury. Matt alluded to him earlier in the episode. Chris Godwin, we talked about it on Sunday as well, is done, probably for the year. He's done here. So that means we saw Breshad Perriman go off for a hat trick last week. I have some big feelings about O.J. Howard, who's coming off of his highest target total with 8 looks of the season in a nice matchup. Jameis Winston is, what, 600 or 700 passing yards away from a crazy record. Mm-hmm. It doesn't seem to matter. I'm fascinated with Bruce Arians, too, because, like, where we started this season with him, I'm going to quote you, it was a great quote, coming out of retirement to establish the run with Peyton Barber, and here we are with Breshad Perriman, like, reaching a ceiling that we only imagined and pretty much closed the door on, and O.J. Howard finally getting some usage, and Cameron Brake going parallel to the ground on some plays. Like it's kind of fascinating, and you know that this is going to be a high scoring game. I think according to BetMGM, it is the highest projected point total of the week at 51, unless that is moved a little bit. And because the Bucs can't run the ball, you know that they're going to put it in the air, and the matchup against the Texans is solid.
It is, and the Bucs also have kind of become there's always these like random teams that become spoilers towards the end. Like, I think the Browns were that team last year, you know, as they started surging.
Another Brashad Perryman team.
I mean, Perryman, the tide that
the spoiler. Should we just call him the spoiler?
He's the spoiler. Like, the Bucs have become that team, that spoiler team, because like right now they're over the last 4 weeks, they're fourth in point differential. They're the fourth best team in that metric. And that's not just a product of the passing game, although it is mostly the passing game. You know, they're putting up big numbers right now. But like the defense also right now is not that we know they can stop the run, but they've been all right. And, you know, not for nothing, Football Outsiders has their weighted, we quote DVOA a decent amount here, but their weighted DVOA metric, which accounts for strength of schedule and your most recent performances, they have them as the eighth best defense in the NFL right now. Like, they're not just getting totally shredded. They're a pretty good team. It's just how much do you trust them? Like, Jameis Winston, 5 interceptions on an opening drive this year. We know what he does. I think at the end of the day, I think the Texans are a much better team. They're a 3-point favorite right now. I think they can win by a lot more than that. But this is, like you said, it can definitely turn into that high-scoring shootout.
Let's talk about the Texans a second then, because I mentioned that I had Kenny Stills on my bench, and this is a week that I do like him a lot, especially when you take into consideration the 13 targets, 8 of which he converted. Danny Amendola managed against for over 100 yards, managed against the Bucs. Obviously, they're giving up a lot of production to the slot. That's where Kenny Stills does his best work. Kiki Cutie is a scratch likely for this one, and Will Fuller is back, but we know that he's not as versatile as Stills is, even if he has a higher ceiling.
Yeah.
I've heard a little bit of pub for Duke Johnson here, but again, the Bucs' ability versus the run makes me, especially in week 16, there's just not enough stability here. So I think Kenny Stills, I mean, man, I wish I had squeaked past. I only lost by like 3 points. I wish I had squeaked past because I would absolutely flex him hard in week 16.
Yeah, he's a super volatile guy. We know that, like, based on, I think having Will Fuller helps him though. Like, even if you think it theoretically, 100%. They suck air yards away from each other. That can go either way. And last week it went towards Stills. It went away from Fuller. It could easily flip this week. But I also think that you mentioned it, as the defense continues to improve, the slot is still their area of weakness. So that is a good spot for Kenny Stills.
Not in a good spot this week is Tom Coughlin.
Oh.
That's he got fired.
Boomer 0, Millennials 1.
Oh my gosh, my mom is in town. We got in a huge fight about like boomers and millennials a couple of days ago.
Nice. Sounds like the holidays.
My mom's like not a typical boomer, but she was defending boomers to the nth. And I was like, Mom, what are you doing? Like, you're like the antithetical boomer. It's not you.
It's not
a sore subject. I got into that with my folks over Thanksgiving as well. Like, my mom was like, we deserve to be, you know, put on the ice floe out to Valhalla.
Oh, the Eskimo goodbye.
Yeah, but my dad was really, he was really fighting on it, so.
Right. And I was also like, Mom, your complaints about the millennials are like anti-me, right? Like, I'm not your typical millennial, and you are not the typical boomer, so let's just decide that we both live in the upside down.
But Tom Coughlin,
that's not what happened.
Is the typical boomer
with the Khan family and Tom Coughlin.
Yeah, my buddy Tony Khan went to his dad and said, we got to get rid of this boomer. Anyways.
Okay. So Jalen Ramsey 1 is the answer here.
And Dante Fowler. And
the NFLPA.
Most of the roster of the
also,
Jackson.
Yeah, by the way, the players that are still on the team, like A.J. Bouye has like shown no restraint on coming back at what the Coughlin era has been like. Leonard Fournette, of course, like he had a few things to pop off about today, too. The guy's fined $100,000 for sitting when he was made inactive last year. So there's been a lot of stuff coming out of Jacksonville. And, like, I can't believe Tom Coughlin is still doing the damn turn the clocks, like, forward bit. Did you see that about the...
Oh, yeah, when he messes with the time situation, yeah.
Yeah, and all the play, like, they asked A.J. Bouye this morning, what is the first thing that's been different about the team since Coughlin's been gone.
I know what time it is.
Yeah, he said the clocks are all back to normal. Like, unbelievable.
I'm not being gaslit.
Yeah. What a disaster for the Jaguars. Not just like from this part of it, all the grievances and everything like that, for the NFLPA to come out and say, like, hey, I mean, you have to make the change when the Players Association comes out and says, maybe, maybe consider this when looking for your next, like, free agent destination. Like, basically, don't go play for this old psycho in Jacksonville. But also, like, from just a team-building perspective, they made so many bad decisions. And what the hell do they – where do they go from here?
I know what I would like to see. I don't know if it'll happen. Like, I would like to see Marone fired big time. Obviously, that feels like it's going to happen.
I think it's going to happen.
Next Monday morning, it feels like.
Yeah, on Black Monday, that'll happen, right?
Although I'll say, like, there are some – I saw some talk on Jaguars Twitter today about, like, do you think – not that it means, like, Marone is going to stay because he's going to go. But, like, maybe Marone, like, became more of a player's – friendly coach, but by having to be like the good cop to Tom Coughlin's bad cop. I don't know that it holds any water, but it might make him a more tenable hire for his next team than whatever. But he's not eating a fire. Yeah.
I'd like to see Flip. I mean, we all know that I have a giant affection for him. I'd really like to see John DeFilippo just become the HC and do it.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Why not? So we talk about quarterbacks all the time and how, like, well, we can, what are they gonna, if they don't sign Jameis to like a 2-year deal, even if the interception issue is still the same, like, what are you gonna do? There's an inventory issue. Well, the same thing is with coaches. Like, you didn't get like somebody that Zach Taylor had a cup of coffee with, like
I don't think so.
Right?
I don't think this shine on Zach Taylor is that kind of thing.
I mean, who this year, maybe someone off of Shanahan's roster, but like, who's gonna want to come to Jacksonville, especially on the heels of this and rebuild? I think that Flip is in a nice position. By the way, Flip, like, doesn't want to deal with the Minnesota thing. He was not in a great position having been fired, like, with a month, 3 weeks left in the season last year. I think he'd be in a nice position to take over.
I just don't know that, like, I mean, we don't know anything about head coaches and, like, who's going to be a good coach or not, but...
Well, it's a marriage, right? Like, it's not just finding the right match between quarterback and this is something that Scott Pioli talks about a lot, like finding the right marriage between not just skill set but personality match between the quarterback and the head coach. And like, you can't have too many roommate issues.
But does
you
that
don't know those until you live together?
Yeah. Does that mean you're going with like Foles in 2020 as
no.
your guy? Because I mean, that was like one of the reasons that Foles was brought onto the roster because
right.
like he had a connection with Flip. But
I don't think he had enough opportunity yet. And I think you have to go back. I think particularly because this is a team that has had trouble selling tickets, right? They get blacked out continuously in their market, frankly, because the people that live in Jacksonville, my girlfriend Robin is one of them, and so is her family. Like, these are Georgia or
yeah.
Florida fans. These are Saturday football fans. They're not Sunday football fans. But you have to make some excitement. You have to create something here. And the defense 2 years ago did it
yep.
for this team. Now, Gardner Minshew is that thing. So from a business standpoint, if Flip is this offensive genius, this up-tempo, high-flying coordinator, or I guess head coach, play caller, then we have to lean towards a quarterback who is, unless you bring Mike Leach back, like, let's bring like that. That's a pot. Fine.
No,
bring Mike
no
Leach
team
to Jacksonville.
Will, no team will ever bring Mike Leach.
There
to
is
the
no
NFL.
Better personality to pair with Minshew. It will make so much sense to the populace who don't understand who Leach is from a personality standpoint. When you see him and Gardner Minshew together, boom, this is it. You're going to sell some damn tickets. You're going to have people get in that pool and not be disgusting about it. It's going to be cool.
Yeah, I just think they're in a. They might have to do something like this because they're fresh out of options. Like you said, like they have nothing.
They have to force a rebrand.
They have to force it. I mean, it's a teardown. Like, they're in a salary cap situation.
Yeah.
They're built around a running back that they took number 4 overall, who's pretty average.
And a defense that has flatlined.
And the defense is dead in the water.
Right.
Like, not even, yeah, totally dead in the water. Like, they have nothing to really get excited about. Even Minshew to a certain extent, I'm not even like that excited about the Minshew thing anymore because like it's just there's so
okay, but
much.
What if we tabula rasa this? What if Minshew comes back and we have some glowing offseason reports about he and DJ Chark playing Madden together, and then right like that's a thing, and then you see Leonard Fournette like keeping his damn mouth shut and working out, and maybe Reichwell Armstead and he are doing some like there's gonna be those puff pieces. And all of a sudden, all those tight ends get healthy again. And all of a sudden, like, that team becomes intriguing. And they have a rogue-ish head coach in John DeFilippo or, like, a straight-up rogue D&D style in Mike Leach.
I mean,
Miles Jack is healthier than he's ever been in his life.
Breach. Let's do it. AJ Bouye returns to like Texans level good. Everyone is stoked because there's hope, which is not poison in this narrative.
No. Well, I feel like you're kind of selling some poison here.
And they move to London.
Oh, shit. They moved to London. Let's go. I would love for them. I'm going to eat some shish. Like, what do they serve in Jacksonville? What's the food?
Fried food.
Fried food? Question mark.
Like fried alligator? Is alligator?
Sure.
Food? Oh yeah. Well, it's Florida.
North Florida.
Okay. So like, instead of fried gator, maybe we're doing some fish and chips.
Fish and chips.
Boom. Everybody drinks beer, regardless of where you are, right?
We
have some pints. Let's do it. Anyway, I'm excited for Jaguars 2020. Heard it here first. I'm going to go a little off script here. Surprise.
Okay.
I took a nap in my car, by the way, and it was like day changing for me. Christmas wish or holiday wish for any team.
Sorry.
Don't look at your damn notes.
I was deep in research about what food Jacksonville's known for.
Oh, okay.
And so far, I only saw fried fish.
Perfect.
Yeah.
This is a perfect comp. Okay. So, Matt, if you could deliver one holiday wish for any NFL squad and or player, what would it be?
Holiday wish for any NFL squad. I would wish for the Rams to find a way out of Jared Goff's contract.
Well, they didn't go into the wilderness.
No, they didn't.
No.
And I don't think they would. But that would be the gift that I would give, because I think there's still so much intrigue on this roster. I just think they're always going to be a little held back because of their quarterback situation. I wish the entire league could have some bravery when it comes to quarterbacks. I don't know. I don't have a good one off the top of my head. That was the best I got. What do you have?
I would wish for AJ Green to land with, I want to see him so badly come back to at least not vintage form. I don't think that's possible at 31, 32 years old. But I'd like to see AJ Green after this year be released from the shackles of Cincinnati and ascend on some roster that is not the Patriots.
Yeah, we don't need
that. How about this? Larry Fitzgerald hangs up the cleats. AJ Green comes in and fills the old man receiver role
in
Arizona.
I was eyeing the Cardinals, but it would mean for Fitz to move over.
Oh, he's dust. He's done. It's over for Fitz.
Okay.
I mean, cool. He'll have two big games in September again and then do nothing the rest of the year. It's over.
I was actually thinking either the Cardinals or the Raiders.
Screw the Raiders. Like,
Seems like a Raiders move, though. A very Raiders-y move.
Doesn't it? And I also feel like there's Vegas. There's what is old is new again. That old adage. He gets to go out to California. He
gets to go play with Andy Dalton West. Why not?
Well, I'm not anticipating Derek Carr being the quarterback in
2020. Then who's the quarterback for the damn Raiders?
Nick Foles.
Oh, great.
Feels like AJ Green's just going to be on the Jets and pull a hammy in late
September.
It feels
like AJ Green's going to be on the Bengals.
Why?
Because they can franchise tag him.
Why?
No, I don't think I think that Zach Taylor wants a legacy of his own.
It doesn't make a damn difference what Zach Taylor wants.
No, it does, because this franchise does not run like the rest of the NFL. This is a family-run operation. This ain't Walmart. This is your local mom-and-pop pharmacy.
This is Walmart. It is a family-run organization.
That's why he's still on the team.
No, but
because they didn't want to trade him.
He also, is not playing this entire year because he's not interested. There is some...
And
because
they ran him out on a gravel field.
I don't blame him. I don't blame him for not wanting to do it. But, the Titans? I don't know. I would like to see AJ Green go somewhere kind of cool.
I think Cardinals and Titans are good suggestions. Screw the Raiders.
Speaking of the Raiders, can we talk about them for a second?
Yeah, sure.
Okay.
Oh, yeah. Go for it.
Well, there is some pertinent fantasy news. So let's kind of go back to being a podcast that delivers utility.
Okay.
Hunter Renfro. I know you don't like this. You don't like being useful.
No, but entertaining and cute.
You're good at that.
Yep. Got it.
So Hunter Renfro is back in week 16. Josh Jacobs is not.
Yeah.
Now, Darren Waller has been a target monster without Hunter Renfro. He has been Derek Carr's, number one underneath target. And that's kind of the only target that Derek Carr is interested in throwing to, right? Yep. Josh Jacobs not out. So now DeAndre Washington, a week too late, is back into the discussion. Are you downgrading Waller at all, or does his athleticism, despite only scoring 3 touchdowns over the entire season, by the way, over 2 games in the middle of the season, dissuade you at all?
I mean, I don't think that Hunter Renfro matters that much. I think that...
Well, the numbers would disagree with you in terms of volume. So if you're not chasing a quarterback who... Always, I think it's an interesting conversation because if I'm not a quarterback, a tight end, if we're hoping for a touchdown from these tight ends, you're not going to get one from Darren Waller.
Most likely, no.
Right. So you're going to hope for giant production. And his production definitely slowed when Hunter Renfro was on the field. He's had double digit targets since Renfro was out with a punctured lung. So in your championship against the Chargers, who have their stud safety back, are you downgrading him at all?
Maybe a little bit. I think also because I think the bigger issue for Oakland, well, we know that they're terrible. They're 32nd in point differential since week 12. I also think that that's going to bring DeAndre Washington onto the field as like a receiver.
Yeah.
And like his 7 targets interferes in this little stretch we're talking about here without Hunter Renfro. So that can also be part of the equation as well. That would seem like between Renfro and maybe a running back that they actually want to throw to, which again, still makes no sense with the Josh Jacobs thing.
I have to believe it was injury related.
Maybe, but it was all year. I mean, has he been hurt all year?
Maybe. Maybe that was part of the reason he didn't want to be shown on Hard Knocks. I don't know.
Maybe. It's just strange that he was so effective. It's weird, though, that he would be so effective as a rusher. I mean, the only reason that he was like a good fantasy player is because despite the fact that the team has been terrible all year, despite the fact that he isn't used at all in the passing game, he was so hyper efficient as a rusher. And like now the last 3 weeks for him, at least while they've been in this awful stretch that I just mentioned, point differential wise, he's been inefficient as a rusher mostly, but still getting enough volume to be like a small floor play, but still nothing in the passing game. It's very strange. How do you like Washington this week?
We're going to go to Washington.
No. I meant the player, DeAndre.
I was like Seattle?
Not the team.
or DeAndre Washington. I do like DeAndre Washington. I have him in that low-end RB2 range around like RB23-ish.
Floor guy only. At least the Chargers can still get there. I think they're better as a pass defense, theoretically, now with all their guys healthy, but they still get barreled over. I mean, Mike Boone plowed through him for 2 touchdowns
yes.
last week.
And he does have the fresh legs that we've talked about, these end-of-the-season guys who haven't been played as much.
Yeah.
And I think that Phillip Rivers is still good enough to take advantage of Oakland's secondary, so I do expect the Raiders to be chasing points. And since we have seen DeAndre work in the passing game, I think that buoys him a little bit more.
Yeah, fire both these teams into the sun for me, please.
Okay. No complaints. Happy to do it. I don't have that kind of power, though. I'm not Dr. Manhattan.
It's all right.
Anybody watching Watchmen? It was great. All right, where do we want to go next? We talked about Houston at Tampa Bay. I think we're good there. Let's talk about Buffalo at New England, one of these other Saturday games. Obviously, there's no Thursday night game, so we don't get yelled at by Brett since we have no game to reference.
No yelling. I just wrote a note. Now I'm yelling. Now
thank
you've
God.
Upset me.
Oh. I'm happy to see Thursday night football go. There are a lot of great Thursday night games this year, I feel like, actually. It's nice, like, oh, Thursdays are
free again.
Free again. Same with Mondays.
I can never watch them in real time because my commute is so rough. So I'd maybe like watch a quarter of the game here and then get home and then have to watch everything. So I never like tweeted or anything during the game or would want to look on Twitter to ruin it for myself. But then was up till like midnight watching the game and working because we have dream jobs. So Buffalo at New England. Okay, real quick. Non-fantasy angle here. I was talking to one of the dads at my kid's school, and Mac's dad, in fact.
And
Max,
what's
Mac,
up? Mac, even better.
Mac's dad. And Mac's dad said to me, he knows what I do for a living, and he was complaining about spending all this money on Mohamed Sanu, blew all his fab on Mohamed Sanu. He is a Pats fan. So that's how we got into a conversation about him being a Pats fan. And he said, you know, I have to be honest, this week, I'm rooting for Buffalo because I am tired of being a villain. After this thing in Cincinnati, I'm done with it. I'm done with the Pats. I feel like they just get caught too much. It's starting to feel dirty. I'm excited by Josh Allen. I'm excited by Scott McDermott. I love that they always play the Pats close. I have incredible respect for them. And then another dad came over and said, me too. And I just sat there like nodding my head because I was fascinated
Wow.
to see in this week the Bills getting love from Pats fans.
Get out of that Boston bubble. Come to the West Coast and free your mind, Patriots fans.
Sure. Yes. Maybe it was, I don't know, it could have been a lot of factors. But regardless, from a fantasy standpoint, I mean, there's nothing here that I want to do. I mean, obviously the vulnerability against, we talked about this, it's similar situation to the Pittsburgh game last week. The vulnerability that presents for Buffalo is the run game. Are we trusting Sony Michel? No.
No.
Right?
No.
We've learned our lesson there. I mean,
he was fine last week. He got you about 8 points. Like, that's the best you can probably hope for
that's
right
it,
now.
Right?
And I think you could probably do better this week.
Otherwise, N'Keal Harry is interesting, but from a fantasy standpoint, now that he has, like, a full-time role, I don't like the matchup well enough for him.
Do you think
White
who
and
wins
Gilmore
this?
On both sides of these defenses.
Who wins this game?
I think Buffalo wins it. Maybe that's wish-casting a little bit. Probably New England wins it, but I don't. Here's the truth. I don't think that the Bills definitely lose this game.
Oh, for sure. I mean, I completely agree with you on that. Like, honestly, it's a very low total game, 37.5. The Patriots are 6.5-point favorites. Like, that's...
I think I would take the Bills.
Yeah, I think it would be closer than that.
Yeah.
And the 6.5 points. I mean...
I can see this just, being a field goal game.
It is always tough, though. In Foxborough, like, it's a big advantage for New England there. The thing is, though, like, if Edelman is not healthy, like, this is a...
It's an excellent point.
There's just nothing to like about this pass offense right now. And I think McDermott is a good enough defensive coordinator. Like, doing it to Duck Hodges is one thing compared to Tom Brady, but, like, is a good enough defensive coordinator to adjust things. Like, they are not one of these defenses that just goes out and asks their players to execute, like Dallas or the old Seattle model or Atlanta. Like, they do mix things up. They disguise things. And, like, that is appealing, especially in this matchup against a Patriots team. Like, you know, one of the best quarterbacks to ever play, and he's playing with a bunch of garbage cans right now.
And a still not complete or healthy offensive line.
Yeah.
John Brown downgraded here.
Probably don't.
Outside of your wide receiver two, are you just downgrading him to like a wide receiver three because of the matchup?
Here's the tough part. Like, this is what we would have said last week, you know, too. But I think against Stephon Gilmore, it's a totally different discussion.
Great. Rams at 49ers. NFC West matchup.
Oh, baby. This is exciting. Oh, man, I can't wait to watch this game. I think it's funny, too. Like, right now, the 49ers have jumped into the top eight in terms of point differential. And, like, that goes to show their offensive passing improvement. Like, mm-hmm. Jimmy G has gotten much better over the second half of the year, especially in terms of like explosive put the play on his back type of thing against it. But they're coming off such a troubling week against the Falcons. Like, but I mean, the Falcons aren't a total joke.
Yeah. I thought that our colleague Therese Paylor made an interesting point about this game. He called it a look ahead game, thinking that maybe Shanahan forgave or overestimated his familiarity with Atlanta too much and maybe didn't plan because next up was the Rams. And so he was looking ahead to the Rams game and maybe didn't plan so much for the Falcons game, which I thought made a lot of sense. From an injury standpoint, the Rams are without Troy Hill. So I think the analysis, however, stays the same. That's their cornerback, and that is the weakest of their three cornerbacks. And we have seen opposing offenses try to take advantage of that.
Not always successfully.
Successfully, but that has certainly been a matchup that opposing quarterbacks have tried to exploit. Troy Hill's out. So I imagine whoever replaces him is not going to be as good. So which of these 49ers receivers do you then, especially to your earlier point about Jimmy G's, I mean, you could say that Jimmy G is becoming a better passer. I could add, and maybe it's a little bit of both, that Kyle Shanahan schemes his receivers open better than anybody else.
No one has an easier job than Jimmy G, like at the quarterback position. Maybe save Kirk Cousins in Minnesota. But I think he has done well to exceed. Like, at the beginning of the season, that's why they were winning, because like Kyle Shanahan schemes his receivers open, makes the job hell of a lot easier. I think as he's gotten more comfortable, maybe, or like Emmanuel Sanders making a big difference, Deebo Samuel coming on, I think he's just improved a little bit. Let me ask you this question. If you had to start a franchise, contracts equal, like not what they're on right now, but just contracts equal, they're both getting big-ass quarterback money. Who you start a franchise with, Jimmy G or Jared Goff?
I would say probably Jimmy G.
I know, and that feels weird, right? Because
no.
It feels weird only because Goff has reached a much higher height in his career.
Well, he's played more.
He's played more.
He started more games. I think that that's massive.
Like, career statistics-wise, it's pretty heavily in Goff's favor. And we just said that Jimmy G... I think I'm with you. I think Jimmy G is the correct answer, but it's just... It's interesting that Goff has reached such a high statistical ceiling, like blowing it away last year, and then it's interesting.
So I'll give my reasoning. I like that Jimmy G comes from Eastern Illinois University, Rolling Meadows High School graduates, my rival high school growing up, and that he played behind. He was a backup, obviously, behind the most famous quarterback in the league, and he had time to learn, to develop. He's been in two systems, two really great systems. And also, I do think that that number one overall pick does not provide a chip in one shoulder that is necessary for ascending and also not just reaching a high level, but maintaining it. And Jimmy G has got that, got to prove him wrong. Like, I'm not just a handsome guy. I'm actually good at this. I'm not just a backup. I'm worth the money. I belong in San Francisco. I can be a franchise guy. And you know, I've made the comparison before that Jared Goff and Tom Brady look to me very similar in terms of Brady's early career. But Brady has had that dog in the fight, kind of like drank the Kool-Aid, was willing to work, you know.
Oh, yeah.
Was the underdog. Oh, yeah. And Goff just never had to experience that.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that that just makes you a little bit softer. Like, I've said this before. Anybody I know that I find remotely interesting has had to suffer and struggle and strive a little bit in life. And the people who've had it handed to them, they may be pretty, but they boring AF.
That is 1,000,000% true. And I think also that, like, play, that reaches into their playing style,
yes,
too. Because I think Jimmy G's not, like, one of the best statistical passers under pressure, but Goff is unquestionably this one of the statistical worst.
Sure.
And I think his lack of a plan B is super apparent. And at least this year, the gap between them statistically, just from a raw perspective, Garoppolo's 9th in adjusted yards per attempt and Jared Goff is 21st. And they're playing in very similar systems.
Well, and I mean, everyone talks about the ice water that runs through Tom Brady's veins. And Garoppolo has a lot of that.
Yep.
I mean, that's just...
Except that overtime game against the Seahawks. That was one troubling moment, but yes.
All right, let's get back to it. For what it's worth, I think that Kendrick Bourne is an interesting dart throw because of the Troy Hill injury. I don't like it. There's not going to be a lot of volume here. Like, maybe he's just a DFS play that's super, super cheap, because obviously we're going to see Kyle Shanahan heavily target George Kittle. But I do think it wouldn't surprise me to see Bourne have like a 4-catch, 53-yard, 1-touchdown game.
Makes sense to me.
Moving along to our Sunday games, Cincinnati at Miami. I'm kind of excited for this game.
Yeah, I mean, it's... The Dolphins have become highly interesting,
mm-hmm,
from like a watchability perspective. The only thing is, like, on the Bengals side, like, Andy Dalton has not been, he's been better than Ryan Finley, but that was like a 0th percentile bar to clear. I think overall, though, he has not been like a great fantasy asset in and of himself.
I think the benefit he brings to fantasy, you're right, not individually, is that he does bring a little bit more ability to fight back to the Bengals. So because the defense is so bad, there's enough offense to either make the opponent do more than just throw their lead rusher against them, or, you know, some point totals are higher. Tyler Boyd is certainly benefiting from Andy Dalton under center.
Yeah, last week notwithstanding. I think, too, I really like Joe Mixon in this game, obviously, from like a from a DFS perspective.
Yes.
Like, I think from like a value salary perspective, I think I really like him this week. And it's interesting, too, because you mentioned that the Bengals don't stop the run very well. The Dolphins don't run the ball very well. So
Ryan Fitzpatrick is the team's leading rusher.
Yes, he is.
Oh, my gosh. And please, you guys have gotten questions and DMs about Patrick Laird. It doesn't, but like, Miles Gaskin is the same thing as Patrick Laird at this point. Like, I mentioned Patrick Laird, what, five weeks ago? I feel like it's not a thing, especially after last week. Neither of these running backs do you want to touch in DFS or, what is it called? Regular season? What is
season-long redraft fantasy.
Redraft. Thank you, my brain. Long season, kids. How awesome could the Dolphins be in 2020 with Parker and Preston Williams healthy? Just real quick.
Pretty awesome.
I'm intrigued. Mike Gesicki, too, coming on towards the end here.
There's not nothing here, which is what we thought, you know, maybe 2 months ago.
I'm getting a little bit optimistic. I wouldn't say excited, but I'm intrigued. Pittsburgh at Jets. Pittsburgh.
Revenge game, Le'Veon Bell.
He is my bust of the week.
Yeah, I mean, please. Please. Like, there's nothing to get excited about there. There's something to get excited about in New York anyways. I don't like Jameson Crowder this week.
Nope.
I don't like...
Like him.
Yeah, but even like, you know, at different times we've been like, hey, the Steelers really struggle to cover the slot. They've become a lot better of late covering the slot because they're a lot better everywhere. They have two defensive player of the year candidates on their team.
Mm-hmm.
So I just don't... There's nothing I like here. Jamal Adams says he's going to play this
week,
too.
That's what I was just looking up to make sure. He's been out the past 2 weeks.
Yeah.
So.
I think pretty ugly game for fantasy. There's nothing I really want to get invested in here.
Well, speaking of ugly, Giants at Washington.
Not so ugly.
Because you like, let me guess, Adrian Peterson.
Adrian Peterson about to win you a fantasy championship for the 100th year in a row.
But what about the fact that the Giants have gotten better?
Much better.
As a result of the acquisition from the Jets.
From having 30 defensive tackles on their roster.
And,
all these guys like play two snaps per game.
This is weird. Janoris Jenkins gets let go, or he gets released, right? And the Saints acquire him, and he now reunites with Eli Apple in New Orleans.
Probably might replace Eli Apple in the starting lineup.
It's very bizarre. Like, very there's strange. Some weird feelings going
you
on.
You
got to
get that giant secondary back together when you can.
So. Give me your Adrian Peterson. He is also one of my sleepers of the week on social. But what's your analysis?
Well, he's got 39 touches over the last 2 weeks with Darius Geis largely out of the picture. Chris Thompson is nothing. This team, Bill Callahan has said since he became the interim coach, he wants to establish the run with Adrian Peterson because at the time Peterson was the only healthy back. But and even though the Giants have become a very good run defense. I think the fact that this game is going to be close because
both teams are trash.
But the funny thing about Washington is they're not hot trash
Haskins
anymore.
Haskins has gotten better over the last year. And it was Leonard Williams that was acquired from the Jets that has given the run defense in the other New York team a boost.
And the 29 other defensive tackles that they have on their roster. Now, Washington started out at the third worst team in terms of point differential on the season. They're the third worst. But over the last 4 weeks, they're only at -4. Like, they've been playing close competitive games. They're 2-4, or they're 2-2 in their last four games. They had a 5-point loss to the Packers and a 10-point loss to the Eagles. Both those teams are flawed. However, they're also NFC playoff contenders. Like, Washington right now, especially from a pass defense perspective, is a lot better. I think the fact that this game is going to be very close, Peterson can get you like an ugly fantasy line. Like, it's not gonna be super efficient because of the run defense, as you mentioned, but all those touches I think are gonna matter a lot.
And he is still in your that same RB 20 to 24 range.
Yeah, he's $16 in DFS. Like, that's a perfect buy. I think it sucks, it's gross, but it's a perfect buy.
Well, your new team, apparently this team in Washington that you adore so much.
Should I say your
new favorite running back Adrian Peterson to your other old favorite running back I can't even do it with a straight face. Christian McCaffrey is traveling to Indianapolis.
There's so much hurt that you just discussed there. Anyways, Will Greer's under center, though.
Yeah.
Mr. Handsome Will Greer.
Gross.
That was a bad take on my part. Not a handsome guy.
I totally forgot about
just
that.
Any other white dude with a beard. As I say, as a white dude with a beard. Will Greer's under center. I don't think it makes a big difference for anybody.
I mean, the Indianapolis Colts defense is only $16 in Yahoo DFS. That to me is like,
No. They're so
rolling 16, with it.
I'd rather play the Falcons for $11.
I know. I think you're going to get a pick or two here from Will Greer, first time quarterback, very like widely available defense if you're looking to stream.
That makes more sense to me. Like, I still think DJ Moore is a bad quarterback's best friend. I think Will Greer is probably going to be a bad quarterback. I think the analysis stays pretty much the same because, like, Kyle Allen was one of the worst starters in the league. So,
how does
like,
it affect Greg Olsen, though?
I would say it's negligible, like I've mentioned with everybody else.
T.Y. Hilton for the Colts expected to play. I do like Marlon Mack. He didn't do what I expected him to last week, but the Panthers are giving up all the damn points to opposing rushers, so I do like Marlon Mack here as well.
Ugh, these two teams both are so bad of
Matt
late.
Can't take it, so let's move away from it and get to an exciting matchup. Lamar Jackson at Baker Mayfield. You like that one?
At
like
Baker it? Mayfield.
Yeah.
Tough scene there for the Browns. I think that I still love Lamar in this game, love Mark Ingram in this game. I mean, it's pretty much do what you normally would do with the Ravens. And on the Browns side, like, I don't even think you have to get tempted this week. Like, last week it was, Liz, I don't want to have to start Odell Beckham. Please don't make me do it, but I have to do it. And I'm not going to make it to my damn fantasy Super Bowl.
Also, Matt Judon is getting so much pressure every week. I think he's going to freak Baker the flip out.
Browns need an offseason so bad.
Maybe Kareem Hunt gets a bunch of looks. Like, maybe Jarvis Landry gets a bunch of looks. But I'm not touching them against I don't want any Browns right now.
No.
All right, so then let's move on. I do like Mark Andrews again. I mean, I had a question. Somebody said, do I start Jacob Hollister, who has Arizona, or Mark Andrews? And I just don't want – I cannot – even though the volume has not been there – I will not move away from Baltimore's offense right now.
I remember we had the whole Mark Andrews debate after the game was over last week.
No.
I mean, like, we were podcasting, and while Thursday Night Football was a few hours away, and we
weren't allowed to talk about that, but we did. And then
but
we
you
got,
did.
We got and yelled at. So we're going to move on because Brett, so that he doesn't.
Liz makes Brett sound like the most tyrannical
I'm
podcast producer.
Also, you haven't been looking at me today, Matt, but I've just been looking at Liz being like, move it along.
See?
Eye contact between the hosts is important, I've been told.
I know, and eye contact between the host and the producer is also appreciated.
Jacksonville at Atlanta. Now, this is a Falcons defense that you're interested in playing for $11 on Yahoo DFS. We already talked about the offense and how they desperately need Mike Leach at the helm and or John DeFilippo. Is there anything else you have to add here other than Julio Jones getting like, 20 targets last week against the 49ers?
Nope. Keep it moving.
Moving along. I will say I like Devonta Freeman here a lot. This might be finally the last week. We've been trying to make it happen all week. But again, flatlining Jaguars defense makes me like Freeman. And without Calvin Ridley, there is some support in the passing game for him. He's like the number three receiver on the team.
The stoppable force versus the movable object.
Saints at Titans. Here's one that's a little bit exciting.
This is a good game. Damn, is Derrick Henry healthy? You know, doesn't participate in practice today. Very, very concerning because they have become one of the most, I mean, they've become one of the best teams in the NFL. They fight the Texans pretty close last week. And really, if not for like a season turning play on the goal line,
the Ferkster
popping it up to Whitney Merciless. Like, we could be telling an entirely different story about 100%. How that game turns out. The Titans are still top five in point differential since week 10. They're a really good team, but I worry that Derrick Henry not being completely healthy is going to be severely problematic in this game because without Sheldon Rankins and without Marcus Davenport, you think you could run on the Saints.
But Marlon Mack wasn't able to, partly because of game script.
Yeah, I mean, partly because Jacoby Brissett had him in a 17-0 hole before I got my first beer.
Fair.
I think,
right, I just said game script.
Yeah,
so thank you for punctuating the point. So do you think, but do we believe that Ryan Tannehill can do enough through the air with A.J. Brown?
No, I don't know. I think there's a chance that the Titans, like, for as much as I like what I've seen out of them, you know, Ryan Tannehill obviously isn't playing, like, he's not playing quite what his numbers would suggest because his numbers would suggest he's the best damn quarterback in the NFL.
Fair.
I think there's a chance we could see a little bit of that regression, and it's just bad enough to get the Titans like a multi-point loss here. You know what I mean? Like the Saints are really coming together right now, and for the more problematic part of this game to me is Drew Brees is hot. Michael Thomas is really hot.
I was just going to say, is Michael Thomas your number one wide receiver on the week this week?
Yes.
Yes.
On Mad Bets, one of our gambling show here, sports betting show. One of our props for my segment this week was who's going to have more yards, Derrick Henry or Michael Thomas in this game. It's clearly Michael Thomas because the Titans are super banged up at the cornerback spot.
Let's skip the Raiders at the Chargers because I don't want Matt to like melt out of fury. Let's talk. Oh, another squad that you love, the Lions. It's an easy watch. The Lions at the Broncos. Hey, Brett's Broncos. Let's see if he lets us go over on this one.
And we got Matty P and Bob Quinn coming back next year. Who's excited?
Well, we knew that was going to happen.
Yeah. I mean, I guess. I thought it was a pretty good chance Patricia would get
No, there's no way they were going to fire him because Matt Stafford hasn't been healthy. And I think that injury like covered him because
they
there wasn't enough data. Yeah. To
it's fair enough.
Fire him. So
how many, like 17 points combined in this game? What are we looking at here?
Maybe. So I talked about Danny Amendola a little bit earlier in the episode, and he was one of my fantasy damage picks last week. To me, the question mark here is Kerryon Johnson going to play or not? We still don't know. If Kerryon Johnson doesn't play, then I might be tempted in a really deep league to roll with Amendola again. Obviously, Golladay is going to be mostly covered by Chris Harris, who started the season lights out and has struggled a little bit down the stretch here. So maybe Golladay gets loose, but the volume there under Blau has not been particularly good. If Kerryon, I mean, the only reason, I don't think you're starting Kerryon, by the way, even if he plays, the only reason you would do it is if you were in a full point PPR league. And again, this is like because nothing is available. I don't even know how you got to your damn Super Bowl if this is the case. But he does offer a little bit of floor in the passing game, and that would be the only reason to bother with him. But if he doesn't play, then I do think that gives Amendola a little bit of uptick in a super PPR-friendly format.
I agree with you begrudgingly.
All right. Let's talk Cardinals at Washington. Cardinals at Seattle, rather. The Seahawks. Cardinals at Seahawks. These are birds. I don't like birds. That's why I messed it up, obviously.
Oh, man. You would have. I had last night came home and just, you know, I've got these like tiles on the roof of my house and just birds, about eight of them just whisked out of there. And I thought of you, Liz, about how much you hate birds. I'm like, I think this would be a death sentence.
I'm starting to get warm just thinking about it.
Yuck. Gross.
Now, okay, so Cardinals at Seahawks.
the sea chickens.
I don't like DK Metcalf that much, I'll say it. I love Tyler Lockett this week.
Yeah, the Cardinals secondary has become very strong against like outside wide receivers, or at least they're just so bad from the slot.
Patrick Peterson's playing better.
He's playing better. He's coming back.
He was rusty to start the season for obvious reasons, right? So maybe now it's all coming together for him.
Yeah, I like that analysis. And I mean, where do you rank Jacob Hollister, Peach Queen?
We're bobbing for apples now that it's like the winter.
You've been telling me that for about 2 months now, and I've just ignored it the entire time.
Okay, so I think he's like my tight end 10.
All right. It's aggressive. Kind of. But he plays enough snaps and runs enough routes.
If Pat Key is covering DK Metcalf, who's been a touchdown machine, and we like Tyler Lockett, even if there isn't a ton of volume from a passing perspective in Seattle, like Jacob Hollister can definitely, you know, grab four and one of them's in the end zone.
Yep, fair.
And from a Cardinals point of view, Kenyon Drake was an absolute Week 15 winner. He might have been a league winner for everybody.
Yeah.
How's that feeling? How's your buddy, by the way? Did he text you? The one that you said to start James Conner, who did four, four times.
I texted him first just to be like, whoops. It's always good to get ahead of those things.
Sure, of course.
But he was...
Did your PR team release a statement, or did you just do it personally because he's a friend?
Well, I did tweet about it.
Of course.
Yeah, I tweeted. Sure. I tweeted the Cardinals had that rabbit emoticon thing. I tweeted the same thing, but it said, I told a friend to bench Kenyon Drake in fantasy.
Awesome.
A lot of people ask me, are you still friends, or implied that he was an ex-friend. I can confirm that John Michael and I are still friends, and he won his fantasy matchup regardless
of
my... Oh,
you got a pass.
Yeah, he did say, he's like, I said, are we still friends? People on Twitter want to know. Plus, like, this guy loves attention. So the fact that he was
you guys are a great pair.
The fact that he was like tangentially related to a piece of content I did, he was excited.
Dallas at Philadelphia. We already talked about it, so we're going to skip it. Oh, let's end. No, actually, we have two more. Chiefs at the Bears. Well, Brett, you're really feeling the show this week, aren't you? Week 16, no end of the season fatigue hitting you, huh?
It's not the end of the season for me.
Oh, damn.
I'm going to the Super Bowl.
You just want to be done with our fantasy heads?
I'm going all the way through the Super Bowl, yeah.
Yeah. You do look tired. You need some Christmas cookies? Some nog?
I had a chocolate-covered pretzel. I'm all right.
A big one or a little one?
Mini.
Oh, okay. Oh, this doesn't really
count. I'm all right.
Chiefs at Bears, man. I can't wait to watch this game on Sunday.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know about all that, but like, love Anthony Miller in this game.
Sure, I liked him last week too. I've been liking him for a bunch of weeks now. I mean, assuming Taylor Gabriel's not, although I really hate hitching my wagon to anything on this offense.
The troops.
Yeah, but I do like him again, and I did like him last week. So,
and I have been honking about the fact that the Chiefs' pass defense needs some more respect. That is still the case. This is a pass defense to respect. However, if they do struggle one area, it is to tight ends, which the Bears don't have one of those, and slot receivers. So that, I think Miller's a good play, and you know what to do with the Chiefs.
Start them all, except for Sammy Watkins.
Yeah.
Or their running backs,
players,
actually.
Players. So the three guys you want to play, Mahomes, Hill, Kelsey, log out.
Packers at Vikings, another NFC North, no divisional showdown, NFC North. Obviously, we're going to end on this game. It's the Monday night game. Adam Thielen is back and healthy. Obviously, there are questions about Dalvin Cook's availability. Earlier in the week, that shoulder injury didn't look so bad. Now we're not knowing. I guess my question is, let's assume Dalvin Cook doesn't play. I don't think he's going to play. The Vikings really need this one because I don't feel like he's going to play. It would seem ridiculous to me, especially knowing the Packers' vulnerability is versus the run, and you've got fresh legs with Mike Boone. And Madison obviously is out. We've discussed that already. So
he's day-to-day. He might play, but I would say he's unlikely as well.
Let's hypothetically assume that Cook and Madison are out. So where, Matt, are you ranking Mike Boone?
16.
Okay.
15, 16.
Okay. I think that's fair. I think I have him at 18.
Fresh legs, pretty good matchup. Though the Packers have gotten better against the run of late, and that might simply be just because they struggle so much as a pass defense, or the strength of competition, however you want to say it. Regardless, this isn't a good defense, and I think you can get Mike Boone rolling against them. And really, this is just the narrative bowl, you know? Like, can Kirk Cousins finally slay the demon? Who do you think is a better team right now, the Packers or the Vikings?
I think the Vikings are a deeper team. I'm still worried about their quarterback. I know that Cousins...
No, it's totally fair.
...has looked good, but... And Rodgers, by the way, hasn't looked fantastic, but I still feel like when I look at the talent, I have to lean towards the Viking, but it's the quarterback that leaves me questioning. Also, the fact that this game is under the dome in Minnesota leads me towards the Vikings because they are a much better home defense, especially.
Yeah, that is huge. That's huge because I think they've struggled so much on the secondary side. Their pass rush is still good, but, you know, nevertheless, like, it's not the defense that we wanted it to be. I think them being at home is the equalizer here, and I kind of think they win this game. I think Kirk Cousins slays the primetime narrative here, and because of that, I definitely want to buy in on their potential fill-in running back.
Great. Running back 15-16 if he plays. That is it for us now. We'll be back on Sunday night for our Week 16 recap, our final Sunday night of the season. You can follow us on Twitter at Yahoo Fantasy. You can follow me at LizLowes_FF. That's at MattHarmon_BYB. If you want to give us a holiday gift, maybe a review, a nice one would be something generous that we would gratefully receive. Otherwise, we're out.